Welcome to this week's podcast. I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And I'm designer Dave Say.
And this is a podcast episode 20 on a nice semi-cloudy March 31st, a Thursday. What's going on?
What's going on?
Nothing.
Not much. Yeah. We had a podcast last week. Your friend Vanessa Lee came in.
Yes.
And we got an extra one out. Still haven't set up the official guest list for this podcast, but
yes.
You'll be on that soon, I'm sure.
Yes, Mark Cookson, we've got to get him on here.
Yep, so.
And maybe we can get Kenta Koga.
We should get Kenta Koga.
Our top secret word.
Yep. Because Kenta Koga has a lot of insight on what's been going down.
He does. He's one of the guys that does the those Nashua tweet up things, right?
Yep. And so, on top of that, he's very tied in with the Linux community. And they're into everything. Everything.
Oh. So we could get him in here and he could maybe talk about...
Who are you talking about? Kenta Koga.
Kenta Koga.
All right. Yes, that would be great.
He likes to count how many times we say his name. So
I think we're up to eight times.
I don't know. I'm sure we should do a special... Eventually, we'll just do a special podcast where for 30 minutes we just say Kenta Koga the whole time.
Yep. People will start wondering who he is.
Who is this mysterious Kenta Koga?
We should start making posters and putting them
up. It could be like that Obey... graffiti thing,
yep,
with the picture,
yep,
of, you know, that Banksy thing. Yes, and we could
that
do
was
one.
Banksy?
I think it was no. Maybe it was Shepard Fairey.
Yeah,
maybe it was him.
I get them mixed up.
But it could be just like a picture of Kenta Koga, and it would just say like Kenta Koga on the bottom. It's actually, it rolls off. It's fun to say like Kenta Koga.
Yep.
Kenta Koga.
That might be one of the advantages of Japanese, because they have those very short like syllable things going on there. It's akagakata.
Kenta Koga.
Kenta Koga.
Kenta Koga. It's Kenta Koga Day.
Okay, moving on. Let's see what we got doing. Let's do a quick recap of what we're into on the cultural side of things.
Cultural.
Sucker Punch has come out. This is that movie that we were excited by. We failed to go see it, but there's these horrifying reviews coming. People
critically,
don't like it.
Critically, critics are ripping it apart.
And a lot of geeks too.
And I haven't seen the geek thing.
Unhappy.
I've seen a lot of geeks just saying, you know what, this is just like the critics are being like, it's all over the place, and you know, it's the director Zack Snyder went on saying that it's a movie about women empowerment, and of course all the female movie reviewers are like, this is not the case at all. Mm-hmm. I still want to see it, but there is an awful lot of bad press about it. And you know what, like, I mean, the minute I saw it, I knew exactly what it is.
Yep.
And I know, and I like that stuff. You know, that's the weird thing. Everybody's like,
when are we going to go see it?
I don't know.
Soon.
I don't know. We'll have to catch a matinee.
Yeah.
We'll have to catch a matinee.
Maybe this weekend. Yeah. And maple syrup season has started.
Yes.
We went to, where was that? Harrington Farm? Was that the name of the place?
Was it Harrington? It was in, oh my God.
Somewhere north.
It was like up past Concord.
Yeah.
Or near Concord.
Oh, was it that far?
Was it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Remember. And then we went out for breakfast afterwards. But I just remember we bought maple flavored cotton candy.
Oh, how was that?
It was awesome.
Was it awesome?
It was so good.
Yeah. And I was trying to find the grade B amber.
Yes.
Because I've been told that it has a more earthy taste, or is it like a more complex flavor?
Yeah.
As opposed to like the grade A stuff, which is this thin, watery, sweet stuff.
Yeah, they had.
Yeah.
The place we went to, they had those little cups that had the grade B.
Yeah, but they couldn't buy any because apparently grade B runs at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And everything they had was from last year. They'd sold out.
Yeah.
So in this week or in this next couple of weeks, I think this is when the grade B amber is supposed to be becoming available. So I had to keep an eye on that.
Huh.
And I guess the two places nearby to look for would be Parker's Maple Barn.
Parker's.
And Mason.
And Mason.
And... And my friend Diane Vautier was telling me about this place in Londonderry called, what was it called? It was Hank Peterson's from the Peterson Farms. Apparently this guy is out there and he does he does his own maple syruping on an old-fashioned wood-fired evaporator.
Nice.
So that's a little closer, I think, than Mason is. We'd have to check that out. There's a video of him on YouTube, which is pretty cool. He said, here in New Hampshire, we make our maple syrup. I don't know. It seems authentic to me.
The good thing about eating it in New Hampshire is you can just have all kinds of it. You can put it in cotton candy. You can put it in shakes.
Yeah.
It's magnificent.
Mm, yeah.
It's not really bad.
Yeah, we need to work on that. Me too. Flea markets, those are coming up.
Dun, 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 dun. Next Sunday marks the official opening of the Hollis Flea Market in Hollis, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
I am excited.
Is this the first flea market that opens?
Of the ones I think that close, yes. There are other ones. There's one in London, the Londonderry Flea, and I think that opens after. But I don't know when. There's some that stay open year round. Like there's one, there's one in Salem, New Hampshire that stays open year round.
Really?
Because it has an inside place.
Oh, okay.
That's where that picture I took a while ago of all those Mexican wrestling masks.
Oh, okay.
That's where they are. And we keep saying we're going to go back and buy one, but we never managed to get out of bed early enough on Sundays.
Oh, really?
To go.
Because the masks just sell out that early? Or
No, it's just, I mean, Salem's late. A little bit of a drive, so it's like.
Yeah.
And I've been going to, my family are yard sale and flea market people. I've been going to flea markets and yard sales since like before I could walk.
Uh-huh.
So I've grown up on this thing. Like the Hollis flea market, I've gone ever since I was a little tiny person.
Really?
Yeah.
So do you have like this bargaining power sense?
Well, you know, it's weird. Like I've been raised to bargain, but really? You can't bargain at flea markets anymore.
What?
You can't even bargain at yard sales anymore because now everybody's hooked up on the internet, and now all of a sudden they can sell anything they want on eBay.
Hmm.
So when you go over there and you know somebody's got a $20 item and you say I'll give you $15 for this, and they'll be like, I could sell it on eBay for $25, and it's like, all right, well you know what, pack up your little table of treasures and go take it on eBay and sell it.
Well,
so
you know,
there's no haggling anymore, and that was the whole thing about a swap meet was you go and you just haggle.
Well, actually, that might be an invitation to haggle. You could,
well, it
because
is, but,
because they're saying like, yeah, I can sell this on eBay. That's the opening volley.
But they've gotten a lot ruder now because of that.
Oh, really?
Because it's almost like you're insulting them by saying like, you're offering me $5 less.
Yeah.
Like, come on, I got a $20 table I got to pay for the weekend. Like, let's go. So they've taken out this whole really? Ability to, you know, it's like, I mean, my big thing is like, you know, you just reach into your pocket. Like you always walk up to a table and you have something in your hand, like palm something so they can't see it.
Oh, yeah.
And then that way it's like, you know, say I've got like a 10 on me
yeah.
and they want like 15 or 16 bucks.
Yeah.
And you just kind of look at it and you pick it up and you put it down and you pick it up and you look at it. And then all of a sudden you just sort of open your hand a little bit and you see, they see you got a $10 bill and you'd be like, this is all I got. Would you take this?
They know you're lying.
And then, of a sudden it switches because then all of a sudden they're looking at you and they're looking at the product and they're looking at the money and they're looking at the product and they're looking at the money and then they're like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
So, but they don't do that anymore.
Really?
You know, now it's just like they look at it and they're like, eBay. I can put this on eBay. I'm going to take this home, put it on eBay. It's like, you know what? Go home. Take it, put it on eBay. Yeah. Well, get rid of it.
So they lose the sale.
And if I see the same thing on the same table next season.
Yeah.
I'm going to punch you in the face. No, I'm not going to punch you in the face. I'll just laugh at you.
Yeah, so I saw this thing last year. Still going to put it on eBay?
Exactly. Hey, what happened to you putting it on eBay? Where's the eBay?
Yeah.
So, but I love it. I love going. I'm a big, I mean, I buy a lot of movies. And so the flea markets have always been really good for used movies and stuff back when I bought Laserdiscs and then transitioned onto DVDs. And now DVDs are so cheap now. Like, it's like, ugh, there's so much good stuff now.
Mm.
So that's the best thing about, like, the last few years is you know, it's like when DVDs came out, you could usually pay, like, $8 to $10 for a new release.
Yeah.
And then the older ones are right around, like, $5 to $7. But now that, you know, everybody thinks they've shifted on the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I mean, last season we were getting movies for $1, $2 a piece. It was like good stuff too.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I like doing that. I mean, it's like go to Redbox for $1 or you can spend $2 and you can have a hard copy that you can keep in your library.
Mm.
But yeah, so that's what's going on. The flea market's opening. I'm a big flea market nut. I'm excited.
Great.
Yeah.
I had to admit that with Blu-ray out, after having seen a Blu-ray disc up close, I'm thinking the appeal of DVDs has diminished a bit for me.
But I still don't, like, from a normal viewing distance, like, we watched Up.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of instances where it was like, wow, that's really super detailed. But from, like, sitting on the couch looking at the TV, it's hard to really determine. I mean, yeah,
maybe if you had a larger TV, yours is like a.
Yeah, it's like a, I think we have like a
20 something.
I don't even know. 26, inch. 27, 28.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can see it not making that much difference, especially for the couch viewing distance. Yeah. But if you had like a 40-inch one, it might make a difference.
I guess. Yeah, that's true.
40 or 50 inches.
My mom bought a 42-inch the other night for her bedroom.
Oh, like, really? You should plug the Blu-ray into that.
Giant freaking TV in her bedroom. Like, really?
It's interesting when the TVs get big enough that you can imagine yourself like going into them.
Yeah.
You gotta have that 27-inch monitor.
Yeah.
And like, when I first got it, I was like, this thing is gigantic. It was like you could stick your whole head in it. And it just changed the scale. Now it seems small again. But it made a big difference. Okay, so that's that. Nothing else really going on that we've heard about. Let's see. Oh, well, we've got workshops coming up, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've set the schedule.
The schedule has been set. I have 6 dates this year. I've just been trying to sort of push them a little bit.
Yeah. So you're running 6 of them?
Yeah. I think it's almost, basically it's 1 a month.
Okay.
And the first one starts April 30th, so a month from today.
Oh, that's pretty soon.
Yeah, a month from now. So I've just been sort of getting the new field guides just came in, and I think they look really nice. I'm very happy with those. And then I've been updating a little refresher slideshow thing that we do at the beginning and just sort of, you know, making it look a little more attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully we'll get some people to sign up. I've got one person coming in from New York, which is crazy. I just got her full payment
cool.
the other day. So she's coming to the April one, and I've been lining up some models. And so, I mean, if anybody listening has taken it and liked it and would recommend it, share it with your friends. If not, check it out. It's portableportrait.com. It's a full day lighting workshop. And, we sort of go through the basics of off camera flash and location lighting.
Yeah.
And everybody, it's on hand, so everybody leaves with memory cards full of images that they might not otherwise get a chance to shoot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they leave a little smarter.
Yeah. I learned a lot from it. Applying the knowledge right now. Except on my tabletop. But it certainly is nice to get consistent lighting results.
Yes.
Instead of just like guessing.
Winging all the time. Just a wing and a prayer.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention this Friday, tomorrow, Friday, April 1st. If it doesn't snow it out. Nashua Jelly co-working session at Studio 99 Nashua.
Yes.
And did I actually say that correctly?
Studio 99 Nashua.
Studio 99 Nashua.
Yep.
And it'll run from noon to 5 p.m.
Yes.
Down at 115 Main Street. Take the Mechanic Street exit. So basically behind, what's that sandwich place? Nashua Garden?
Nashua Garden.
Yep. There's a little parking lot down there.
Yeah.
Right around where...
it's in between Seedling Cafe and Nashua Garden.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yep.
Yep. There's a little parking lot that's down there. Or you can park it in the High Street parking garage and then walk over through that alleyway.
Yeah.
It's a little easier because you don't have to feed the meter all the time.
Feed the meter.
There's like a 2-hour limit, I think, on the parking meters that are right next to Studio 99.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, planning to do with some... I'm going to try to create this multi-site WordPress thing on Friday. So I'll be doing WordPress stuff. So if people have WordPress questions, they can stop by and ask.
Right.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Cool.
Part of the Empire Building.
Empire Building.
Oh, speaking of which, I got that new Hugh McLeod book.
Yeah.
It's called Evil Plans. Yeah, I know you liked the last one, right?
Ignore
you
everybody.
You liked it so much that you just took it
home. Let me borrow it.
And then I just gave it to you for your birthday. Like, I was never going to see it again. It. Yeah, what did you think of that book?
It's good. I've read it multiple times.
So what did you get out of it?
It's good. It's based off his website, right? Like he takes...
Yep, gapingvoid.com.
Gapingvoid.com. And his whole thing is like he does little cartoons on the back of business cards, or he does little cartoons on business card sized things. So it's good. Like it's a very motivational book, and it seemed like it was geared towards people that just want to start doing something other than what they're currently doing, or if they've always wanted to do, you know, like run a small business or try to do something like that. Yep. It's a very motivational book that tells you, you know, just do it and just ignore everybody. Like, don't pay attention to all the people that are trying to...
That was the title of the book.
To bring it down, you know? Ignore haters everybody. Gonna hate. Like, that would be the second part. Like, part two, haters gonna hate.
Yeah. What I found interesting about his approach was he used to be a copywriter, advertising guy in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized he just hated his life there. He just
woke up one day.
It was like, not... He wasn't doing anything that was cool. He was just, like, angry all the time. But he writes from that perspective. So instead of being the motivational kind of book that says rah 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 sunshine and sugar, he comes from that place like with cigarettes and hangovers and like doing crappy work, and then just waking up one day and says, you know what, this sucks. And he takes the time to go. He goes back to Texas, where I guess he's from, and he just scribbles these cartoons on the back of business cards. And he was doing this in the bars, I think. and let some of that bile out. It's pretty incisive and funny stuff.
Bile.
And from that, you know, he developed, you know, all this other stuff. Evil Plans, this his second book, takes off. I guess you could say it's a continuation of the first book.
Yeah.
The first book is really a collection of his blog posts. I mean, readjusted somewhat.
Yep.
And he's famous for, before that, for writing something called the Hugh Train Manifesto, which is the basis of his philosophy about just getting off your butt and doing stuff.
Yep.
It's worth reading. So, planning on writing a small review on the book for the website.
Good.
My website, I mean.
You've been doing a lot of book review kind of things lately.
Yeah, I keep getting book reviews, getting offers to review books from publishers.
Please read my book.
Yeah, I wrote that book review on Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek book, you know, a few years ago, and it was like a well regarded review. And then since then, like, you know, other, you know, I guess book publishers and or their agents have been, I'm on a list somewhere. So I've been getting these books from Penguin Portfolio and other places.
Nice.
So that seemed to be in this category of self-improvement, because that's, I guess, what my blog is known for.
Mm-hmm.
Self-improvement, getting better at stuff, doing more, or trying to. I'm no guru. So yeah, so that's been going on. What else, man?
I don't know. What else?
I don't know. Let's take a break and think about it.
Okay.
Okay. Get the space bar here. And we're back.
Yay. All right. So I have a question for you. We're going to get a little more serious right now.
All right. I'll put my serious voice on.
All right. So like last week or the week before, I think it was last week, there's been a big thing about all this Arts Council funding that's being just eliminated in the state. And so I think last week the Judiciary Committee or House Finance Committee or whatever, they basically abolished all arts funding in the state.
Uh-huh.
And I think it went from, I'm talking out my butt, but it was like, I'm going to say it was $450,000 that the state allocated towards arts funding. They cut it down to $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of stuff is being moved around, and then like just the Arts Commission is just done for the next 2 years, something like that. So like, you know, it just sort of makes me think about like, you know, what does the arts mean to me? What does it mean to people out there? And we had talked about this in the past, and you had a really good explanation for like, what is the arts? What does arts mean to you? Like, what does the arts mean to you? Like, why should it be funded? Why should it be state funded or just like, how is it important to you? And what does it mean for you as far as, the arts.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because I was listening to NPR one day, and there was this dude. Let me look it up. This dude named... he was this ballet dancer named Jacques D'Amboise.
D'Amboise.
And apparently he was like this badass like a ballet dancer guy. He did a lot of cool things with... he was from the inner city. Then he went and performed... ballet at the very highest levels. And then later on he opened up a school for dance for inner city kids.
Nice.
And he'd said something cool about the arts. I have it written down here. I have this all stored in the Google Wave, which I maintain with my friend Colleen. And let's see, what did he say? Oh, he said something about how if you expose your kids to the arts, they'll benefit and love the arts all their life. And then I wrote later as a note to myself, this made me think that this is a good justification for the arts in general. The arts teach us about love, how to love, and are produced from love. And this makes us better human beings as a collective social species. Through love, we are inspired, we feel, we are reminded how we're connected with things other than ourselves. And our emotions are channeled in new directions. So I thought that was very valuable because... if you grow up without that feeling, like even take art right out of it, and if you grow up without love or love without connections to other people, you are a diminished human being. Yep. You're isolated. But with love, with those kind of connections, and I'm not talking about, you know, dripping, you know, pink Valentine hearts type love, but really, you know, something that you can be passionate about, something that moves you to action. If you don't have any of those kind of connections in your life, you have a diminished life. You become a isolated, sour, bitter person. And so, if through art you were to come across a piece that, for whatever reason, it opened up some horizon for you, some channel, something that you didn't feel before, that could change your life for the better.
Yes.
that could make you think something you didn't think before. And if you value that those kind of experiences, you're talking about loving the arts. Colleen points out that music falls into this category too. Mm-hmm. Things that make you feel things. And so, you know, I can understand the argument. Like, why should I pay for other people to express themselves? And that's a good question. I would say that if there's art that's being made to merely express or be ornamental, you know, for a reason other than love, something that came from a place where I'm just making this thing to sell something, mm-hmm. or I'm making this because I need to feel better about myself. That's not really about sharing that vibe, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But there are pieces that you can tell. You can tell that the love's gone into them. And those are the kind of pieces that I support. And that's what I would like to see more of.
Hmm.
So that's my own personal
standing
on that.
Very nice.
But what about you? Like, you've been in the arts for a long time. So did you always think of yourself as being like a citizen of the arts? So do you have like a responsibility to it in a way?
I don't know. I mean, early on when I was young, I had no concept of, you know, artistic community or anything like that.
Yeah. How about now?
I think a little bit. I see. It's for me, it's kind of weird. Like, it seems to me that I sort of have my feet in two different camps. Like,
yeah.
I went to a fine art college. I spent 4 years at a fine art school. I was sort of not conditioned, but the primary focus of those 4 years were how to gain the knowledge to refine your craft, to be able to artistically express yourself and create work, and then also deal with art in a gallery type situation where you would show your work and sort of like that. And then since I've been out of the school, the other foot has been geared more towards a commercial point with art involved. And the two of them make the most sense. Like, when I first got out, I was like, I really don't understand how I can make a living just doing fine art gallery stuff while I like to produce the work.
Yep.
But now when I'm doing a lot of stuff with the bands and everything, like, that's something I've always wanted to do. Mm. I'm able to take what I've learned and the years that I've been able to refine my craft, and I can now apply that to a commercial point.
Yep.
And so I like it. I like this marriage. I find it frustrating that within those two circles, you know, like, I have a studio here in Nashua. I know a lot of the art people that are in Nashua, and I see how hard it is to sort of create a cohesive community around that. And that can get a little frustrating. It gets a little frustrating knowing that, like, and it's weird because it's like when we do Art Walk, for example, I don't get the same out of Art Walk as other people in the building get out of it. Other people in the building, they might make jewelry or pottery, something that when somebody walks in, they can right away see what they do, and they can pick a piece up, and then they can purchase it, and then they can walk out with it.
Right.
With me, it's a little more difficult because you come into the studio, and a lot of times people don't know exactly, is it a gallery? Like, they see prints on the wall. And it's, you know, it's like if I wanted to sort of use Art Walk as a vehicle to maybe push my fine artwork where I could actually produce prints and that sort of thing. But I like doing the more commercial stuff. So I think an art community is important. It gets really frustrating when, you know, everybody that comes in during Art Walk is like, man, I had no idea this building existed. I had no idea there were so many artists in the area.
Yeah.
So that kind of gets it. It's not frustrating. It's frustrating from like just from a sad point. Like, there's so many creative people out here that they want to spend their days creating work, and they want people to see it, obviously.
Right.
And so it's just a matter of how do you do that? And it seems like, you know, like when things like arts funding gets cut, that's just one more step that it seems like it's preventing the artists themselves from getting exposure. In a way, you know, it's like, you know, people should be able to market themselves, but a lot of times people don't know how to market themselves, and they don't know how to get the word out there. And a lot of people don't have a lot of money where they just can't spend it on advertising. So I completely like just walked around with whatever the question was, but,
no, but actually that's a good, segue to what I was thinking. Like, you have the same problem that I do. Like, maybe my problem is, like, as a graphic designer, like, people can't come into my space and say, oh, you do graphic design. I'll take that one for $25.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. Right. I had to sit down with somebody and say, what is it that you're trying to do? What is it that you're trying to convey? What's the meaning? What's the message? What's really the objective of getting this? And people generally aren't used to thinking that way, unless they're already used to using graphic design services. You have the same issue if you're dealing with people who aren't used to using commercial photography.
Yep.
It's a little bit different in the gallery sense because people know why they're buying gallery pieces.
Right.
Even if the artists don't know.
Yep.
Like, the gallery owner knows why people and what they are selling. They are selling a story of the artist. They are selling a certain look. They're also selling some aesthetics. And they're selling, like, a lineage of this. You're buying a piece of work not from just, like, some guy in China churning these things out on a machine, but he was born in the woods of Vermont and he lived for 14 years digging turnips out of the thing, and then one day he realized he could make turnip ink, and from this turnip ink he created a series of snowy landscapes called Vermont Winter.
Yes.
And Vermont Winter 3, which is the series we're offering exclusively here through the gallery, is the culmination of one of his most recent journeys to Tibet. You know, yeah, so something like that, and then people who will buy into, and they'll see, like, and in that, some piece of the struggle that they identify with, or and they want to support it.
Yeah.
And this ties into an insight I had about my own website, because my website is fairly popular.
You know, yep.
It's not, like, you know, in the top 10, but it's in the top 100,000, which is still, like, a big accomplishment.
Yeah.
You know, It's well known in a niche for productivity, and there's a bunch of people who visit it every day.
Hmm.
You know, there's, like, every day I get, like, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 page views, 2,000 people unique every day, and there's, like, still, like, 11,000 readers, even though I haven't, wow, like, posted anything recently. And I cannot figure out why they are here. And they used to bother me. And so, when I think about it, I would think about it. It's, well, I do know why they're here. They're here because I'm posting these useful forms and they're finding them through Google. Some of them are here because I write about the struggles that I go through. This is some of the things like we're talking about right now.
Yep.
How do I face this? How do I solve this? And in a way, they maybe feel less alone or they get some good ideas from it.
Yep.
But what my mistake was, and I think this is a mistake that a lot of creatives who are starting to rise beyond the noise floor of, like, their own getting in their own way and other people knowing about them, is that they mistake the affirmation that they're getting, because it takes a long time to get to the level, like, people are finally noticing what I'm doing and they like it, and that's, yeah, a great feeling.
Yep.
If you've never felt that before, it's like all of a sudden things start feeling like they're coming into place.
Yep.
But separating that affirmation from what you can do for the people coming there's a difference. The people that I can assume that people are coming to me because they like what I'm doing. So let me take that. Let me not think about how to monetize that, because that feels wrong. But let me think, why are they coming here and why do they like what I'm doing? How is it that they are like me?
Yep.
And then provide that need to them. So on my website, what I'm writing about is how do I make myself into a more complete, a better, more capable person? And how do I do this without compromising my values and my principles?
Yeah.
And I think the people who are coming to the website, they're coming here because they like the tools I have, they like what I'm writing about, they like the way I express myself, they like the way that I'm putting words, shaping my words to the thoughts that I'm having, because it helps shape their thoughts. The need that they have is the same. They want to become more capable, more of themselves. They, yep, want to be more true to themselves. And, yep, that's what I write about. So that's a completely separate line of business. I can provide things that do that, and that's what I should sell. And that I can sell without compromising the reason why they're coming. I don't have to compromise being me,
yep,
to suit a commercial need. And I think that applies to everybody. So, like, as a photographer, you are on both the fine arts and commercial side of things. You can do your fine art work, that's separate. The commercial work, you fulfill a need, and you fulfill the need in the way that you know that they already appreciate you. That's the style that you put onto it.
Yep.
So that's my theory.
That's nice.
And we're out of time.
That's good. I think it's a perfect way to wrap up this episode. So
we'll pick up on them next time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, that'll do it for episode 20.
Yep.
I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And I'm designer Dave Say.
And we will be fulfilling needs until the next time we do our podcast.
Unless we forget how to do it. Good chance of that.
And we'll see you all later.
Yep. And that's it.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you to Michael Millar and the As Is Ensemble for providing the music, the opening and the closing music. Go visit him at michaelmillar.com and give him your love. See y'all later.
All right.
Bye.